And one of the things we look at these days is synergy. If we launch in a particular country, is that going to strengthen itself or the local countries around it in synergy? Obvious example is Singapore, Malaysia. They're different, but they're physically connected. So there's some synergy between the two.
Hello there, I'm Cynthia Dearen and welcome to Business Beyond Borders, where I unlock the secrets of international business success. Today's episode is all about skincare and, in particular, Ego Pharmaceuticals, an Australian company that exists to improve people's lives through the science of healthy skin. The company researches and manufactures 120 products for skin health in its own world-class pharmaceutical plant in Melbourne, Australia. It has 596 staff, based across 12 countries. Ego's famous products, which include the QV range of cleansers and moisturizers and SunScent sunscreens, sell not just in Australia, but also to the Middle East, the Asia Pacific, and the United Kingdom. Ego has won numerous awards for its performance in the export space, and it is one of Australia's great international success stories. Today, I'm talking to the man who has steered the company to international success, Alan Oppenheim. Alan is the son of Ego's founder and the current CEO. Alan, great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Cynthia.
Now, today we're going to be talking about Ego Pharmaceuticals and in particular about all the work that you've done to take the company international. But before we get started, I just wanted to ask you this. I was at the launch of ANZ Opportunity Asia Report last week in Sydney, and that report highlights some of the emerging trends in Asian markets. And I just wondered, at Ego Pharmaceutical as the CEO, what kinds of trends are you seeing in Asia in the skincare space? Is there anything in particular that you've noticed recently as a trend?
That's a kind of a big and complicated question, and I need the marketing team here in the room. And in fact, it's so Asia is different to the Middle East, and you know we're in both. And let me kind of, I'll go around it. In the Middle East, we're in the GCC countries, so it's six countries, it's one language, it's one culture, it's one religion. They're physically connected. You can drive from one to the other. In Asia, it isn't nearly as cohesive as that. North Asia, we're discovering increasingly is different to Southeast Asia and all the pieces in between. China is not Singapore. Singapore is not Malaysia, even though they're connected. So while we might see some trends and we see lots of competition in Asia, in particular in Singapore, but also in Taiwan and more, lots and lots of competition. Every company wants to get in and Korean brands are one of the trends that are coming in. There is also a lot of diversity. So we've done consumer research in our Asia 4 countries, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, Taiwan, found some similarities, but a lot of differences. That doesn't answer your question, but it just kind of does highlight the diversity that Asia is.
Yeah.
And many of the countries, you know, they're different languages or different versions of Chinese. I guess the one thing that kind of holds it together, apart from the time zone, is there's usually a fairly strong Chinese influence right through the region. And that's a bit of consistency, but of course there's so many dialects of Chinese, makes it a challenge.
Let's kind of jump back and go to the beginning. Ego is a family company, and I believe you started in 1953, so you've been around for a fair time. Can you just share the story of how it began?
So my grandfather, Dr. Erwin Oppenheim, he was a dermatologist. He had a practice in Germany, in Dresden, and courtesy of the war, the Nazis coming, he had to get out of Germany. So he arrived in Australia just 6 months prior to World War II, had to learn English and start from scratch, built up a thriving dermatology practice, but realised he needed certain products to help his patients that didn't exist. In the 50s, there were very few skin products. So my father, who by then had finished chemistry, formulated products for the skin. And my mother, who was a nurse, went out and communicated the benefits of those products to dermatologists and to pharmacists. So it was my parents, Gerald and Ray, who created Ego in 1953, with my grandfather as I guess the first dermatology advisor. And it's grown hugely since.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And when did you get involved? Were you involved from the time that you stopped studying, or was there something else that happened in between?
Depends how you mean involved. So when I was a baby, I'm told I had cradle cap, and there was no product for cradle cap. So my father made a cradle cap product, which we still have on the market. We have 100% share for cradle cap. It's kind of like dandruff for babies. And it's a small product for us, but it's there. So I got involved as a guinea pig, if you like, in the late 50s. I got working, after kindergarten, I would come across the road to Ego and watch the lovely lady Eunice hand label the glass bottles. We always were at Ego on the weekends, as my dad would be opening up the mail and making some of his favourite product, Pindasol. So it was kind of the family business was truly a family business, and we were in it lots. Formally joined it straight after university, although by then I'd been doing computer programming on our new microcomputer. And for anyone who's seen a microcomputer, they're not small at all. They were seriously big, just small in power. And I was formulating product and improving quality systems. So I joined formally and full-time in 1981.
And today, Ego is a leading Australian brand, and it's also an international brand. And as you've already mentioned, the company is generating a large part of its revenue out of the international space. When did Ego first start selling internationally, and how did that happen?
So my dad, I think, was pretty prescient. 1960, he started exporting to New Zealand, which is 7 years after starting the company, which is amazing. Worked through a distributor in New Zealand. Then later on in the 60s, added the Pacific Islands, added Singapore in 1967, Hong Kong and Malaysia in the 70s, which was amazing change. All through distributors of different types. And then he tried to look at other countries over sort of outside the sphere, looked at lots of different countries outside. And for every country he looked at, sorry, for every 10 countries he looked at, one might have succeeded.
Okay.
So it's a tough gig. But today, half of what we make is export.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
And how did your dad go about working out which markets he was going to enter? And then how does your team, when they look at the world map these days, work out where you should go next?
How do I put it? My dad was a bit more random, is perhaps the word I'd use. And the world was a different world back then. Part of it was he would go to see a dermatology conference somewhere and then wonder whether he could delve into that particular market. He took my mother to meet some very famous dermatologists. Marion Silsberger was one in the US who was the first dermatologist in the world to use hydrocortisone on the skin, which was the first steroid, which these days is a core part of dermatology. So he tried a lot of different countries over the years. These days we try to be much more focused. We know launching to a new country is a really big effort for a whole suite of people. So we look at a whole host of things. We look at what's the population size, what's the GDP, is the GDP growing, what's the middle class size like, is the middle class growing? Because if people are improving their lives through the economy, then we can help improve their lives as well through the science of healthy skin. And an example of that might be Indonesia or China or lots of the countries in Asia. In fact, you almost think of every country through Asia. And many of them are developing nations, from Malaysia to Philippines or China and more. And the middle class is just growing really rapidly. So we look at all of that. You know, what's the market for our products? What is the competition like in those countries? Are there some strange things in the market that we think the science is wrong, but to enter that market, you have to comply with that strange cultural rule? What are the cultures like? We look at regulations. For us, we're a pharmaceutical company, so we usually have to register the company with the health department first, then every product individually. And that can be a smallish job or an enormous job. So, for example, in Saudi Arabia, that took 10 years from my first visit to when we launched 10 years of regulation work. So there's a whole suite of stuff that we look at. And one of the things we look at these days is synergy. If we launch in a particular country, is that going to strengthen itself or the local countries around it in synergy? Obvious example is Singapore, Malaysia. They're different, but they're physically connected. So there's some synergy between the two. And we're finding the more countries we're in, the more synergy there is across the world. Dermatologists travel across the world. So a dermatologist from Jeddah might see my products at a conference in Liverpool or in Malaysia. And everything in between, which is great as we get into more countries.
If you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, check out the Dearen & Associates website, dearenassociates.com. Now, in lots of the markets that you've gone into, you've started off by using distributors. How have you found it? What's that experience been like?
Hugely variable. So we still have distributors in some nations, some great distributors who've been strong partners, who kind of understand us and we understand them, and we together work the relationship strongly. But in many countries, we've kind of outgrown distributors. So distributors vary hugely. The benefit of using a distributor, particularly in the beginning, is they're easy. So they look after the sales and marketing for your brand. And that's an easy start to doing the export. And that's, I guess, how Gerald started doing the export in the 60s. But one of the big challenges, if you're using a distributor always has lots of principles that they're working for. So you need to ask yourself, how are you going to inspire that distributor to spend more sales and marketing time on your brand rather than the other brands? And has the distributor got sufficient resources to do all the brands? And that's a question you need to keep asking, because distributors tend to add more and more principals without necessarily increasing their staff. So your whole brand can gradually get diluted.
So without giving away any trade secrets, how do you manage to make sure you inspire distributors to keep doing the right thing? I mean, how do you successfully manage that relationship? What does it actually take?
It takes a lot of time. So I think managing a distributor takes more time than managing your own staff. And remember that when you have a distributor, you're delegating the responsibility for your brand to that distributor, which is a huge responsibility. And we've discovered when we've replaced distributors with our own people, that particular distributor may have treated our brand vastly different to where we treated it. And that's a challenge, because then when you're going with your own people, you have to unlearn the market, to use a new verb, before you then educate the market about who ego really is. And we had that in one country I can remember some years ago. So trying to nurture and inspire that distributor is about spending time with them. Sometimes it might be incentives for the sales team. Sometimes it's asking the question, how can I inspire you? Sometimes it's setting KPIs in your agreement with the distributor that the distributor will commit a certain number of staff full-time for your brands. If that can work, it depends on how big you are. When you're starting from scratch, that can be a whole lot harder. So it varies. And in the end, we've found having our own people in most countries means that we lift the growth from, in some cases, it was like 2-5%, and we lift the growth from that to about 20%.
Wow, that's quite a lot, isn't it? Yeah. I guess for some small companies, though, that's not something they can do at the beginning, and that was probably the case for Ego, because you just don't have that manpower.
Absolutely. To put on the ground. You don't have the manpower, you don't have the capital to put in the stock, you don't understand the market. So often you're going into a country and I don't understand Malaysia, it's different from Australia. And you're hiring a distributor who does understand Malaysia or Singapore or Taiwan. So distributors are really useful in the beginning. But I'd recommend companies, if they can grow and if they possibly can, to have the long term and eventually grow beyond a distributor, unless the distributor's great. And I said in a few countries, we maintain that the relationship with distributors.
How have you found them? I mean, what was the actual process that you went about to locate bunch of different distributors and then to work out which one you were going to work with?
Yes. Where do I start? My brain just broke. It's more complicated and more messy than recruiting for staff. So recruiting for staff, there's a whole lot of process that you can go through, which is a bit neater. Recruiting for distributors is more messy. So we will often, if we're going into a brand new country that we don't know, then we will talk to Austrade. And in our case, we'll also talk to the Victorian government. They've got an equivalent team in some countries. And you just get complimentary information. And that's that. All they will do is give you information about the country. You know, in our case, where do you buy your skin products? Do you go to pharmacy? And some basic things. You know, what is it? How do patients buy their products? How do patients get their pharmaceutical products? And there's a whole lot of general things which people like Austrade can help. We will go into the marketplace and talk in the shops and try to understand. We'll talk to people about prospective distributors to try to get lists of. In some cases, we've used a consultant. In the Middle East, I used a consultant way back in 1992. So they were doing some work for me before I went for the first visit, first couple of years, to try to help me understand the Middle East and for them to select, make a short list of distributors. One of the things I found is if a distributor is similar in size and culture to Ego, then I found that the relationship was better. We would then understand our problems better, our strengths and our challenges, and the empathy was just a bit stronger. I've worked with very small distributors, and then we've grown beyond that, the distributor. I've worked with a distributor listed on the stock exchange locally. The latter is not one that I recommend particularly, because there were then issues with communication. There are certain things that then had to be communicated first to the stock exchange before they could tell me that they were doing a whole lot of change and restructure, or they'd been sold or been bought, and you know, constant challenge with that exercise. So it's trying to find a distributor that you feel comfortable with, I guess, is a neat summary, and that has the skills. In our case, it has the values. We had one distributor, and I probably shouldn't mention this, but one distributor who was doing things with our product that was illegal under the local law and totally breached our agreement we had with them and breached our values. And then when we put it to them, they then denied what they were doing, even though the evidence was clear. So, you know, distributors do vary, and you need to make sure they've got the cash to invest in your brand and to pay your bills. There's a whole suite of things in selecting a distributor. It's a bit complex.
What do you think about exclusivity? You know, it's a question I often get. A company will go to a distributor and the distributor will say, well, we want the right to distribute your product exclusively in this territory. In your mind, is that something that companies should agree to, or is it something they should avoid?
So for us, it's always agree. It's kind of simple. And the reason for that is we're talking about registrations. Mm. So if I take New Zealand, for example, we have to register our products with the health department in New Zealand. And what happens is that goes through, it has to go through a local company. So our distributor does that with all the information and science that we provide them. So we do the hard work and their name goes on the certificate. But the health department in New Zealand wants one company to own that registration, and hence one company responsible if there's a recall, if there's a problem or communication, whatever the issue. And as a result, in our industry, you have one exclusive distributor per country. It's simple like that. When you get to the online business, such as Alibaba and more, much more complicated. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the traditional business, it is exclusive for us. And that means that we know that distributor has a motivation to drive the brand, to do the investing, sales and marketing. We work with them to do that. But it means that there's a commitment. If the distributor's not making good money out of your brand, they're not going to commit to it.
Let's go in a slightly different direction now and talk about sales and marketing and look and feel and branding. Obviously, you're in a lot of different markets and consumers in different markets have got different preferences about packaging and how things look and that customer experience piece. What kind of changes have you had to make to Ego's Australian branding for your products to resonate with customers abroad?
So the branding hasn't changed. The actual name or the trademark has changed in on none of the products. And we try to work really hard when we're creating a new brand that we can actually use it across all the countries. In fact, we're trying very hard. The ideal would be to have all our brands in all our countries. And it depends on how the market size is for head lice or sun protection in each country. So we don't necessarily actually achieve that utopia. But we do change and tweak and edit and adjust the messaging that we do around the brands. We try really hard that it's consistent across countries so that when a dermatologist does go from Jeddah to a conference in Liverpool or in Kuala Lumpur or in Melbourne, that they are seeing a consistent message, that they're seeing that the QV brand, that the dermo brand is still consistent in message. The creative, the model, the picture might be slightly different. The headline might be slightly different, but absolutely consistent. And that's a tension that we have as we keep growing. It's a tension between encouraging the local marketer to meet the needs of the local market versus maintaining the integrity of what does this brand mean. And that's a real challenge. But we're trying to nurture that at Ego rather than top down saying you shall do this, this, this and this, which is not the Ego way at all. In fact, the last year we've created a new team within Ego, our global marketing team, and their job is to be looking across the world for synergy and to help nurture this consistency across the world. And we've really ramped up a lot of our marketing team right across the world, so that's become quite a nice challenge. But in general, our marketers in the different regions have really enjoyed the interaction with their peers across the world, including the guys in Melbourne. So we're not a directive organisation. It's that nurturing, the harmony.
Have you got a best story from Ego's international operations, or a funny story or a horror story that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I was trying to think of these, and there's a whole lot of all travellers, and you would have gone through this, and all your listeners would have gone through this, of arriving at an airport after 30 hours of travel and the luggage didn't. And I'm not going to go through there. That's just fun and crazy. And afterwards it's fun. At the time it's not. And there are times where, you know, I was lucky enough in Hong Kong, my wife and I, we actually got the chance to tour the home of our distributors, the owner, and how small apartments are in Hong Kong compared to huge houses we have in Australia. Their kitchen was the size of two phone boxes. Their bedroom had a fantastic view, except that the wall was touching the bed on three sides. So getting in or out of the bed was a challenge, let alone making the bed and anything else, but really minute apartment. It's kind of a weird, but then we've got the story of when we had government officials from a health department, and I'm not going to name the country, but there were three inspectors and they were at Ego for 5 days, which is kind of typical of our industry. And then about a decade later, I spoke to another Australian company who got the same exercise, same country. And he said, that third auditor, you realise he was an armed bodyguard. What did you do about him? And my heart just kind of stopped. We don't normally kind of frisk a government inspectors who are coming from a health department. And I'm then thinking, how on earth did he get a weapon? There was a whole lot of questions which were just weird and curious. I never actually found out the truth or whether he was pulling my leg.
That's pretty funny. So looking ahead, Ego's already in a bunch of places around the world. Where do you see the most promise internationally and why?
So our biggest region at the moment is the Middle East, and we've done a really, really good job in continuing to do that. And we're in UK and we're little islands and across Asia, and I think our biggest potential right now is Asia. We're not in all of Asia, so there's lots of countries we're just not in. And my dad would describe an undeveloped nation as one that doesn't have Ego products, which I like as a nice definition. So the US is an undeveloped nation. So there are lots of countries in Asia we should get into. There's lots of population. It's a growing suite of growing economies right across Asia. Very exciting place. It's kind of in our time zone too. which means that communication via video link or via telephone or even via emails is kind of easier and kind of a bit more simple. There are challenges though with Asia. We're going to add synergy. So as we add more countries, we add synergy across Asia. But the biggest challenge, I said before, is all the languages. So if you go into another country in Asia, it's probably adding another language, which means another suite of labels, which means another suite of stock keeping units. So more investment in stock, more forecasting challenges and complexity. And all of that we're trying to constantly manage. But I think Asia has a very huge and very exciting potential, not just for EGO, but for Australia.
Alan, it has been super to have you on the show today, and you've given us so many fascinating insights. Can I just get any final thoughts that you might have for other founders of companies, especially in that consumer space, looking to go global? What do you say to people who are looking at it and wondering if they should have a go?
Do it. To coin a phrase. Going global, going into your first export country, going into your 10th export country makes your business more complicated. There is no question about that. Every country adds a suite of complexity to EGO, but it also adds a suite of strength. So the fact that we were in UK helped us get into Saudi Arabia. The fact that we've got products going into Cyprus means we're keeping on top of the EU regulations, which helps us in New Zealand and into Iran, where they're using the EU regulations. The more countries we're in, the higher it raises the bar for everyone across EGO. And that means that we're learning, and when things are coming, like in our industry, serialisation is coming from Saudi Arabia, but Malaysia's just announced it as well. So it means that we're solving problems across multiple countries and we're learning. It's hard, it's complicated, but unless you're in the international space, I think you've got a challenge to actually continue to thrive. So absolutely do it.
Great to have you with us. I look forward to seeing what EGO does next.
Thanks, Cynthia.
If you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, check out the Dearon & Associates website, dearonassociates.com. Our consulting services, which include market research and modelling, cross-cultural consulting and strategic business connections, deliver deep insights and create value for larger companies looking to scale internationally. If you're from a smaller organisation that wants to expand its global footprint, take a look at our International Business Accelerator program, which my team and I created to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of going global. The program helps business owners to build a great strategy without having to reinvent the wheel. It creates the momentum to put the strategy into play, and it helps them to generate or raise the funds that they need to get an international expansion off the ground. We built it especially for founders and CEOs who want to take their business to the next level and wondering where to start. It's structured in a way that's simple to follow. It's digital so that you can take part from anywhere in the world. It's a lot of fun and our members love it. Check it out at dearonassociates.com.